First of all, I would like to thank you for the possibility to give this talk here. And what I'm going to talk about today is some work that hopefully is going to appear soon in collaboration with Nima Arkani Ahmed, in which we try to address the question of what are the properties that observable in cosmology need to satisfy in order to come from some sensible Bach physics, in the sense that they come from some sensible Hamiltonian evolution. In a way, this question comes from the idea of trying to put different type of observables on the understanding of different type of observables on the same footing of our knowledge of scattering amplitudes. If somebody hands you this matrix, you know how to check that this matrix is a sensible S matrix. At perturbative level, we know that it has to be local and has to be unitary. In the general Lagrangian picture, the way that we understand these two properties are through the analytic structure that the scattering amplitude have. For example, at tree level, we know that in the standard Feynman picture that we can have some particles which collide, then they generate some other particle that at some point that can decay, and this correspond to have a pole of this type, p square minus m square, where m can be the mass of the internal state, with a very precise residue. This type of properties is the imprint of what of locality and unitarity on the S matrix. So if somebody tells you that I can compute the S matrix in some other way, where without making any reference to this picture, you know two things. You know that it has to have to reproduce this type of singularities, and more generally, you know that the S matrix has to satisfy the unitarity property, that SS dagger is equal to the identity. Okay? If this structure are satisfied, this check are satisfied, you know that whatever they are handing you, it's a sensible perturbative is a sensible S matrix. Now, the question that we are asking are what are actually the equivalent check that we can make on other observables, such as the one that we have at cosmological level, which typically are either the late time correlators or, if you want, the wave function of the universe, which contains all the information of all the possible correction functions that you can that a late time observer can measure. Now, a deeper reason for asking this type of question is that for the S matrix, we actually have a picture in which we can define from first principle some other object, which turns out to encode all the properties that we ascribe to the S matrix. And in this sense, locality unitarity can be thought as emergent properties from geometrical structure of this new mathematical object. We want to see if a similar picture holds for this late time correlators. So typically, what I'm gonna refer to are let's say FRRW cosmologies. It has the name of the amplitude hedron, or also you can set up in for a larger set of the amplitude hedron holds for n equal 4 square mils, but for a larger set of theory, almost similar picture holds. Writing the amplitudes in terms of some manifold which is called, variety which is called the Grassmannian. Okay, so there is a way in which all these properties can be hidden behind some other geometrical structure. So the type of object I'm going to refer to are, as I was saying before, the late-time correlators of, if you want, this wave function of the universe that, if you want, it's defined as the following function, e to the I, one, x2, two, where these phi are the fields which are the late-time boundary that where I'm doing the measurements. So, okay, let's write this this way. X plus e to the plus dot dot dot, you get product of j from 1 to n, n fn x1 xn f1. So the actual objects I'm gonna compute, in this sense, the statement is to compute the wave function, is r. This object. Then, if you want to actually obtain the correlators of these fields, you have just to do the integral of the wave function squared times the number of fields according to the number of points that you want in your correlator. So, but what I'm going to refer to is actually this object. So if you want, what we are doing is having some initial state that, by the way, an important difference in between this type of setup and what we are doing in scattering amplitude is that for scattering amplitude, we can repeat an infinite amount of time the experiment. We can set up some initial state. We make them collide. We produce some finite state. We can compute these probabilities. We can compute the relative probabilities between different processes, for example, a 2-2, 2-3 scattering, and so on. While in cosmology, you have an initial state on which you don't have much control. You have a single evolution, and this is the only experiment you have, and you can make some measurements looking at the different region of your late-time surfaces. And what one does are actually a special average in between all these regions, in the sense one is computing correlators. So we have some state at eta equal minus infinity, where this eta is the conformal time. We have some evolution. We make our measurements here at eta equal 0. And so we are going to compute something. Rather than talking very general, I will make some general statement. But to make some precise statement, it's better to refer to a concrete model. The concrete model that I will refer to is conformally. Conformally coupled scalar. Yes.
So it's about this before. So this is not the one here effect actually. To be sequenced in some kind of path integral, this
side. Yes. Conformally coupled scalar with non-conformal. Polynomial interactions. So the type of interaction we are going to have are some jk, phi k, where this k can go from 3 to anything you like. And in principle, this jk can be time can depend on the conformal time. So what I have in mind here is to work in a setup where you have some FRW cosmology. So we are in commoving coordinates, so the space is isotropic. And this means that these objects that we are going to compute are going to be just are going to enjoy just spatial translation invariance. So we have conservation of spatial momentum only, and with spatial momentum only, while the, we won't have energy conservation. Okay. So let's try to the zero step to try to answer the question that I asked at the very beginning is simply to try to develop other methods for computing these objects. In a way, we want to follow the same type of developments that there have been in scattering amplitudes, where playing around with the different representation, then some nice idea of how to reformulate these observables came out. So, in order to do this, let's try a little bit to investigate what's happened. So the simplest case is to compute some contact interaction. So we have our flat slice at it equals zero. So for example, this is if I have phi cube, but I can draw any number of leg I want. Here I'm working in momentum space. So here I have is just the spatial momenta related to all the states. And the computation that you will do in order to compute this object.
Is this
Yes. If you want, this is telling just you have a contact interaction at some fixed time eta. The time of representation that you're gonna have is gonna actually depend on how you represent the propagator. So then, I will answer more precisely to your question in a moment. So you can think about this as some Feynman diagram with here are some external edges which where you have to put the free solution that given that I'm dealing with the conformal couple scalar is just like a plane wave. So what you are going to do is an integral from minus infinity to zero of theta where is this point, and then here I will put all the plane waves related to this to these external states, so I can write them like as a sum from r 1 to n r eta. So in principle, I also have the special part where I have the 3x e to the sum of the p's x, and then I have this the coupling constant. That in principle depends on eta. So given the structure, I can just do this integration, which actually gives me the three-dimensional momentum conservation, or the spatial momentum conservation if we are working in higher dimensions, in different number of dimensions. Okay, and then we are left to do this integral. Let me distinguish two cases in which I can consider before this the coupling constant, which is time independent, and then which is time dependent. In the first case, where GK is a constant, so this is the only thing that I have to integrate. And given that the integration runs from minus infinity to zero, this actually gives me just a pole. So the result of this integration is going to be JK divided by E1 plus blah, 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 plus En, the sum of the total energies. If instead I'm taking this object to be time dependent, one thing that I can do is simply to go to Fourier space. So if I go to Fourier space, what's happened is that I get some, let's say, plane wave more that is going to add up to this one. So what I'm going to have here is just with an integration over this this epsilon, but the actual structure, if I forget about this integration, is going to be g tilde epsilon e1 plus blah, 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 en plus epsilon. Substantially, in between the two cases, the final structure doesn't change. You have a pole over the full energies, and in the second case, you get also the energies which are associated to the time dependence of the coupling constant. Now, this structure is important because, in principle, this function is totally smooth because here we are considering just the positive energies. But you can actually think to make to extend your energy space, make an analytic continuation, and actually decide to make some of the energies positive, other negatives. And in that case, you actually can accede to that part of the, if you want, unphysical energy space. And if you do that, it's equivalent to take I will say the center of mass, but at this point, and put it at minus infinity, which makes the boundary arbitrarily far away. So it's like computing the S matrix. In fact, the actual coupling constant is the S matrix. The scattering amplitude. Well, this is trivial because it's just a contact term. This is a very general statement, and in this picture is going to be present for any type of diagram you can think about. So when you take this limit, you actually rediscover. Actually, it's a way to compute the flat space S matrix. Obviously, each single diagrams compute a contribution to the scattering amplitudes at a given number of points. Now, this is a bit trivial. Let's do some more interesting example. This more interesting example is, for example, let me constrain to have just a pi cube. And so let me take the 4-point correlator. Now, here, here I have my coupling constant G3. Now, I have to provide you a further information, which is what is this propagator. Now, the propagator that let me name this point A and B. The propagator, which is going to have the internal energy, let me indicate it as EI, which has energy EI and goes from some time A to time B, is going to be given by the usual translationally invariant time order the Feynman propagator. But then I have also to impose the boundary condition that this it vanishes when it reaches the boundary, so that the perturbation vanishes at boundary. And this tells me that I have another term, which is given by e to the I e eta a plus eta b. OK? So if you want to compute directly this this object, what we have to do is an integral from minus infinity to zero over Now, given that in this concrete example, the integration over the spatial coordinates will factorize all the time, I will just not write it down. So you have all the time consider that I have a support over the spatial momentum conservation. Yes.
Is there a momentum here in this proper integer or position? What happens to the space?
Okay. No, yeah. If you want to write it in fully, you have to. Well, I can write it here. This goes multiplied by e. Pi, where pi is the inter momentum. X a minus x b. Okay. But then, when you do the integration over this the spatial coordinate, everything just contributes to the to the spatial momentum conservation. So, given that factorizes, I just can focus on the time-dependent part of the propagator. But in principle, yes, you're right. This is there. This is the complete propagator. If you want, this is. Without this term, this is the standard Feynman propagator before writing it with some off-shell momenta. Okay. Since now on, given that in this picture where I don't have derivative interaction, this the integration over the spatial momenta all the time factorizes and just contributes to the to the conservation to the delta function which imposes the spatial momentum conservation, I will just write integrals over time, etc. So you have all the time to understand that I have support on this spatial momentum conserving delta function. So we have these two integrals over these points. I have to associate here again all the free solutions. So here I have e a1 plus a2 theta a. Here I have e a3 plus a4 theta b. And then I have this propagator. Which has this structure I wrote down there. Now, if you want to do the calculation directly, which is what will be the Feynman representation, you will get three terms, one for each of this contribution. And the actual final answer is going to be AE 1 over A4 A1 plus A2 plus A in, and this is one term. The other term is AI A4 plus A4 one over the sum again of the energy minus one over A in EI, and then E1 plus E2 plus okay, this is the answer that you get. Now, that seems a little bit horrible. There are three terms. Here we have one diagram. But if you play a little bit with these three terms.
Time, we have a spatial and time coordinates and energy,
yeah.
So why?
Well, the energy is, if you want, is nothing but the square root. So it's just the definition what it is.
Is this the propagator in Fourier space or in real space?
If you want, it's a. Here, We're using the propagator that you will just obtain by taking your field, writing it as the integral over the special part divided by one of square root of the energy, where you have, and then you play with the time ordering. So in a sense, you have a combined representation between energy and momenta and the special part. So it's if you want, it's the propagator that you have even in normal quantum field theory before deciding to introduce an off-shell momenta to make it explicitly Lorentz invariant. Mm-hmm. Did I answer your question?
I should think about it. I don't. I mean, what is the analog of its ordinary quantum field? Without the third term.
Yes, without, so this last term is just comes from a boundary condition. So what you will have in normal quantum field theory are just these two terms, okay, which is are the time order terms.
Okay.
So what I was saying, we have three terms for something that looks like one diagram. So we can try to play a little bit with them. To see if there is some simplification, and actually there is. And the simplification is going to tell us that we have actually a single term. Where this denominator are, one is the sum of the total energies. And the other one are the total energy at each vertex. Okay. So it turns out that in this picture, this EI, which comes from the propagator, is actually which here it looks like a pole, is actually a spurious pole. So from everything that you have been done in scattering amplitudes, anytime that there is such a simplification, there is it means that very likely there is some other representation for these objects, which make this structure actually manifest. So let's see first of all how to get this actual other representation from these time integrals. And then what I want to do is actually to forget to do this time integration and to get some more straightforward way in which I have just to play, if you want, with the boundary data. OK? OK, let's take again this integration. Right, this is again what we are computing. So in order to simplify the notation, let me write the sum of the energy of the energy of the external state which enter in a vertex as x1, the sum of the energies which of the external states which are in the other vertex as x2, and then not to have any indices, this intermediate energy as y. So, and actually, this tells me that I can rewrite this diagram in this way, where these two nodes are two vertices. X1 is the sum of the external energies associated to this vertex. X2 is the sum of the external energies associated to this other vertex. And here we have y, which is the internal energy, the energy of the internal state. So here I can write this as x1 eta A, x2 eta B, and then again the propagator, which depends on y, eta A, eta B. OK? Now, let me make a comment. Given the notation that I use, anything that I said and I'm going to say generalize to any type of interaction, polynomial interaction can put here. Doesn't have to be a three-point interaction, a four-point interaction here. It's a sum of energies which come in this vertex, so it can have any type, any possible number. So in a sense, this holds for this is a diagram, but it's encoding a more general computation in the sense that is not specifying to a specific number of points for the interaction. So now, what we can do in order to compute this object is that, let me take out this equal. I can put here an operator which acts on this this exponential, and this operator is the time translation operator. And if I do this integration, when this delta acts on this object, just brings me down the sum of x1 and x2, and so I get x1 plus x2 for the original object that let me call it this. Let me call it f2, where this 2 indicates the number of vertices. Okay. Okay. Now I can integrate by part, and what you discover is that when this translation invariant operator acts on this propagator, there is no contribution from this time-ordered part because it's time translation invariant. So the only contribution is coming from this this object, which, as I said before, is due to the boundary condition that we need. And when we apply this derivative here, we bring down a power of the internal energy, which kills this pole. So what we have is just an exponential. So what we are left with is the integral from minus infinity to zero, dx, the eta a, the eta b, e to x1 plus y, which is coming from this exponential, eta a, and x2 plus y, eta b, which now I can do this integral separate, and what I get is 1 over x1 plus y plus x2. That is like saying that we have x1, so it's like saying that we have x1 plus x2, and this is the object that we want to compute. So this x1, x2 is the sum of the total energy, is the total energy. And here we have, if you want, the original diagram written in this way, where here now the energy at this point is x1 plus y, and here is y plus x2. What actually one did is erasing this edge and putting the information about the energy in the vertex. If you want a more suggestive way to write it, it's actually taking this extra energy as coming from some external state. At the end of the day, we get there an exponential. So it's really like having a sort of factorization into lower point objects. Okay, so and which is the type of structure which is actually very common in scattering amplitude, where there is a relation in between an endpoint amplitude and the residues of the singularity, or anyhow the singularity, the information encoded in the singularity of the object. Okay. So this is actually more general. I can compute some other diagram, for example, this object, x1, x2, x3, ya, yb, with this method. And This type of structure still holds. The only difference is that when you apply that operator when you integrate the by part, the time translation operator acts before one propagator and then on the other one. This means that you erase or you, in quotation marks, send on shell in turn before one propagator and then the other one. Now, again, this is very nice. It gives you directly in one shot this answer, which actually is, if you want, is the physical answer in the sense that it has just physical singularities. Doesn't have any spurious singularity like the Feynman representation. But again, if you want to go to endpoints, that's these things of erasing the internal edge, etc., can become a little bit cumbersome. So there is a general way, pictorial way, in which we can get this answer in.
I have a question.
Sure.
I don't think I'm following how. So you claim that that thing is F2.
Yeah, F2, where the 2 indicates the fact that here I have 2 vertices. OK?
Right, but then in original definition of the, I guess,
yeah, sorry, that's a misnomer. Sorry.
Okay.
The two really indicates the number of points that you are considering.
Okay.
In this case, this is number of points because, as I was saying before, here in each vertex you can have an arbitrary number of points. Depends on the contact interaction that you are putting there. So
right.
I wanted to put in this way because it doesn't make sense to me to call it a four-point object, because actually it's more general. Depends on what you are putting here. So if I want to stick to just a five-cube theory, then that's I can call this F4, and it's the same F4 that you will see you were seeing in the wave function of the universe.
Okay, so this F2 is not related to that?
No, it's not
related to that. So that what you have there is just what is that thing between A and B there? Is that,
the what?
What you call F2 here.
Yes.
Is that the propagator?
No, F2 is all this object. The whole thing is F2. OK.
But you could have more lines there?
Yes, for example, you can have a picture like this where you have more heads. As I said before, what you have to do is just to keep repeating this procedure of integrating by parts and making act this time translation operator to each propagator, and one by one you erase one edge. Now, in order to make it clear what's happened and to have a more a practical way of computing this object, we can actually make up some graphical rule. Let's start from this, which is very simple. Let's start from this one, and then we'll come to the other guy. So let's say that we want to compute without doing this time integrations this object. Okay. I'm using too much AB. Let me call one and two. Y1 and Y2. OK? So we can just take this object and divide it in all the possible connected subgraph. And to each subgraph, one associate the external energies which are involved practically. The first subgraph is just taking the full graph itself. And to this, we associate the sum of all the energy, the external energies, which in this case are x1, x2, x3. Now, how many way do I have to split this into sub-diagrams? Yes. For example, for phi cube, just to fix the ideas. Okay. So here there are x2, which is a1 plus a2. Here x2 is going to be a3, and x4 is going to be a4 plus a5. Okay?
And you may mention this later, but how many of this holds for time-dependent couplings? Because it looks like you dropped the time-dependence.
Now I was a little bit neglecting, but the only thing that that you have is that if you decide to work with the time-dependent coupling, so you go to the Fourier space, at each vertex you have just to shift the sum of the energy by the energy which corresponds to the coupling. So actually I can include it already in this answer, saying that x1, for example, here I can add plus epsilon, where epsilon is the energy related to the coupling. So the nice way of writing it like this is that it makes manifest that this type of structure is really generic. It doesn't depend on the number of points of the interaction, polynomial interaction I'm considering. It doesn't depend on the fact that I'm considering a time-dependent or time-independent coupling constant. OK. Yes. Then also, if you change picture when you don't have a conformal scalar, so you don't have the same propagation in the SN plus space, what's happened is that you still have this type of the location of this of these singularities, but rather than having a single pole, you can depend on your theory. You can have a double pole. You can have a log. It depends. For example, if you are taking pi cube, simply pi cube in normal de Sitter, which is without considering conformally to be conformally coupled, what you get rather in for the 4-point case is a product of logs. Okay, with this for example, you get this is proportional to log of E1 plus E2 plus EI, and then the sum of the total energies times log EI plus E3 plus E4 E1 plus. Okay? You get some. So when you go to the location of this of the total energies, you still get something which is related to the amplitude, but it's not the normal amplitude, just the high energy limit of the amplitude. Because when you're taking this limit, you are taking the center of mass to be to minus infinity. And if you have some real propagation which depends on the background, as you get to minus infinity, the energy start to increase more and more. So you're going to get a high energy the high energy behavior for the amp. Okay, so do you want me to this to I can cancel? So. Okay, so I have two ways to divide it in two subdiagram. One is just they have to be connected, so I can do either this or this. And again, to each of them, I have to associate, and then I have to sum both on the two contribution. To each of them, I have to associate all the energies of, in quotation mark, the external energies. For example, in this diagram, the external energies are going to be x1 plus x2 plus this edge, which was y3, which is coming, which now is acting like it is an external state. Well, here I have just 1 over. And then plus. Here the same, I have x1 plus y1, x1 plus x2 plus x3. And then I can continue. So the only thing that I can divide into blocks is this diagram, doing this. And here then I get x1 plus y, and y1 plus x2 plus y3. Because here we have the external energy related to this subdiagram are the x2 and the two the energy of the two edges which are coming in. So the same for this other object. So and we got it without doing any time integration. So there are all the just the we can obtain indirectly in a graphical way. Just considering, let's say, the boundary data, which means because these energies are just related to the are the square root of the special momentum square plus the mass square. Okay, now that's given that I have just 10 minutes. Let me see how. So already when you pass from this Feynman picture to this, which what you will actually compute using the Lippmann-Schwinger kernel, using the what goes under the name of old-fashioned perturbation theory, are already here. The fact that it comes from some time integration start to disappear. I can always use some Schwinger parametrization to write it in a similar way, but the fact that it's coming from this type of structure is not, it gives you, if you want, a sort in quotation mark of different triangulation of the time space. But now we want actually to see all these structures. Okay, one comment more. So if I go to the if I take the residue for the total energy to be zero, what I get here is the residue is the residue for all the energy to be zero is given by E square minus E1 plus E2 square, which is another way to write 1 over S minus M square. So it's the contribution from this channel to the S matrix. So so a general question that also we ask, what are all the physical information contained in these correlators? Let's see if I will be able to answer to this question. But before going to that, I want to show how all this structure, all this simplification, actually arise from something that in principle doesn't have anything to do with this time integration, from other geometrical picture, from a geometrical picture. Now, okay, so in order to do this, let's take the simplest example, which is this two vertex diagram. As I said before, this procedure for computing is to divide it in all the possible subdiagram. Now, to each subdiagram, let me associate a vertex which live in a projective space of dimension of p n minus 1, where n is given by the number of vertices plus the number of edges. So in this case, concretely, will be in p2. Okay. So I to each subdiagram, will associate a vertex. Actually, in order to specify that I'm in projective space, I have to say what is the hyperplane at infinity. We use a representation which we stick all the dependence of the energy on the hyperline at infinity. So I can call it x1, y, x2. Okay. Sorry, there is too many y's. Okay. And then I will associate each subdiagram to a vertex. So for example, there is the first subdiagram, which is the sum of the total energy, x1 plus x2, is actually associated to a vector, let me call it x, z1, which in, with that hyperline at infinity is going to be 1, 0, 1. Then I have x1 plus y, which z2, 1, 1, 0, and y plus x2, z3, 0, 1, 1. Okay, so this is clear. What I get are three vertices. So what I get is triangle with 1, 2, 3. And actually, it turns out that the volume, the area of this triangle is x1 big Y, x2 big Y, x3 big Y, and here to, for scaling x1, x2, x3, which, if you do the math, is nothing but what we have computed before. X1 plus x2, x1 plus y, y plus x2. Okay. Well, it just means, for example, if this is a line, these are points. If these are associated an upper index a, these are have a lower index a. So alpha, so there is just a contraction between these two vectors. So in projective space,
there
huh?
In the brackets, the
ah, so, sorry, yeah. So this is just a contraction. Well, the dot product in between these two objects. It just because sorry. So it just to make up that it doesn't have to scale with this with this this, okay. So the numerator is going to be one if you just do the computation. So now this so I can define so in this projective space. These correlators so this, are given just by the area of, for this case, for the area of a triangle. In a more general case, where we have more vertices, is going to be some other polytope in p and n minus one, where n is the number of vertices plus number of the edges of the of this sort of diagram. Now, one thing that I want to say is how this is related to the Feynman representation that we saw before. The Feynman representation had some extra point, which was y, which let me call it 4, and is going to fall externally. And we were seeing that the three terms that were given the Feynman representation, all of them were containing y. So we can consider the object with four vertices, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and triangulate it in such a way that this extra point is always included. So in order not to be do a mess, let me do the following. Okay. Four. The first triangulation, for example, can take 1, 2, 4, which is going to be this was x1 plus x2, x1 plus y, and 1 over y. Then the second triangulation is plus 1, 3, 4. This is again x1 plus x2, y plus x2, 1 over y. But then I have to subtract something because this is much bigger than the original triangle. And the thing that I have subtracted is this other triangle, which still involves 4, which is minus y, x1 plus y, y plus x2, which are exactly the three terms that we were obtaining from using the explicit expression for the propagator. OK, now there are this that I call the Lorentz-like, actually. the Lorentz cycle representation is, I call it like that, because it's actually what is closer to a recursive relation. And one thing that you can show, both doing the time integration or directly in energy space, but I won't do because I don't have enough time, is that if you have, for example, this diagram, x1, x2, x3, y1, y3, this can be written as 1 over y1 squared minus x1 squared. So one collapse, for example, this edge where I put here this a propagator with the data related to the edge and the related vertex. So the collapsing means that you are adding the energies. Okay, again, here, so this is what is closer to a recursion relation because we have a three-vertex object which is related to two-vertex objects times some propagator. And I call it Lorentz-like representation because this has all the form of the normal Mandelstam variable, which is going to be exactly the Mandelstam variable when you go to the energy, total energy, the vanishing, the total energy pool. Okay, but in this picture, this actually 1 over 1 minus x1 is a spurious pole. So in again, in this triangle picture, when you have x1, let me write in this way to be clear, x1. Okay, this again is going to fall here outside on this line because the sum of these two gives exactly this vertex. So what actually is this is doing this representation is computing this term, this in this triangle, and subtracting this other small one to give the representation. Okay. So at higher points, for example, in this case, already we have one through three vertices and two edges, which means that if I want to write actually this, sorry, this was the representation for the 4 point. If I want to write actually the polytope for this object, I will have to work in P4. But what actually it turns out that I can make some sort of projection that I can draw in the blackboard to describe some feature that are even a little bit obscure in this representation. For example, the related polytope is gonna can be represented as a sort of an important remark. What I'm drawing here, even that is something that should live in P4, I'm drawing it in a two-dimensional plane. Just capture some of the properties of the correlator. Doesn't capture everything, so you cannot understand everything. But I'm drawing it because there are a couple of things that yes can be argued by this drawing. Okay, so why I draw that? Because you have as independent as vertices 1, 2, 3. Four, which are common to both of this object. So you have four vertices, and these two are different. So you have in total 6 vertices, which are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Okay. Where here I put the total momentum, total energy, total energy. Here I put this other y1 plus x2 plus y3. Yeah, 1 plus y1, y3 plus x3. Now, doing this computation, which has these two terms is equivalent. You see, this object belongs to both terms to do a triangulation in which I divide this this double prism along this the diagonal of this square. So there are four points which are coplanar, and what these two terms are computing is one side of this of this double prism and the other one the other side. So both these points and this one are common to the two terms. But actually, there is another triangulation that one can do, which is, again, taking, which actually triangulated rather than along this diagonal, along this other diagonal. So computing this part and this part. So in this case, this total energy pole belongs to just one of the two terms. And this is a representation which is not, doesn't have actually a name, but makes manifest, if you want, the physical content of the object, where this term, is the, being the only one having the sum of the energy pole, is the one which has as residue the flat spaces matrix. While the other one, it's a pole which, given that it's not here, disappears in the S matrix, so does not contribute the S matrix, but it's characteristic of the correlator. So if you want, this other representation that is not clear actually how one will derive it just in a time picture, but it's really obvious from having this this polytope picture, is something that makes actual manifest part of the physical content of the of this correlator. Then obviously one has to ask what are these residues here, and in this particular case, actually one discovered that more or less everything is going to get determined by the S matrix. But this is not a general statement because already if you want to if you go to Yamils. In Yamils, you have in the sitter, for example, you have a three-point object which has all negative helicities, and this object in flat space is zero. So it's impossible to and this because and in the sitter picture, this all minus three-point object doesn't have this energy total energy pole. So this is the reason for which we have. We don't have it in flat space, but also this is the reason why we cannot recover it from flat space. In any case, given that it's already 3:35, I'm going to stop here, and I think it's a good point to stop. Okay, for the moment, all this we have been exploring it. Oh, okay, in this let's say cosmological picture, we have been exploring mainly in this for this conformally coupled scalar, because it makes things easier. But in principle, that doesn't have to. It's just a matter of seeing if and how this picture generalizes. Is Beck magic? No, because there is a one-to-one correspondence. Actually, if you want to see it in a deductive way, there is a one-to-one correspondence in between these diagrams that comes directly from, if you want, from the normal diagrams that you are more accustomed to, and this polytope. As I was saying before, I was defining these polytopes in terms of a combinatorial operation that I was doing on these graphs. In principle, actually, you can even define these polytopes without any reference. So they are well-defined multi-multi objects that can be defined more broadly without any reference at all. to these graphs, and then you can discover this graph from it. Okay, as I was saying before, this this exact type of picture works for this specific case. While if you start to have for example, in YAML, so which is still conformally coupled, if you want, the structure is similar, but for example, you don't have any longer a single pole in the sum of the energies. You can have a multiple pole. So many of the physics doesn't change too much, but it changes a little bit how it looks like analytically. And so that one has to see how that can be translated in this polytope picture. I mean, this is something very new. So this is a very epsilon, very small piece that we have been done. But there is a clear idea that the singularities that we have been studying and they come naturally from this picture can have some more general physical meaning and are going to be present also in other contexts rather than this one.
So you're saying that even if you consider more general theories, the singularities are captured by the same polytopes?
No. The fact that you have this type of polytopes is related to the fact that you have this type of singularity. You have single, simple poles, etc.
So you're seeing the change of the polytope itself.
Yeah, you have to see how it changes. Yeah, this is something that we still don't know.
Any other questions?
So. This is actually two mostly different questions. So first of all, do you think there's going to be some sort of way to handle loops that's analogous to the amplitudinal where you're hiding particles, that sort of thing?
No, actually, anything I said can be done in a very exact way for loops.
Okay.
There is no different. You can take your a loop diagram, for example, the simplest can be this one, and then taking it and dividing it in all the possible subgraphs, associating it to the total energy in external energy in the subgraph. And this gives you the integrand, as usual.
And the other question is more sort of cosmology related. How general are these sort of conformally coupled scalar plus non-conformal polynomial interactions models? Like, in terms of models cosmologists actually use for inflation, for example, how broad is this?
Okay. Well, again, this is. I know I'm aware of some work in which people study this conformally coupled scaling for W cosmology, etc. But I take this much more from a quantum field theory perspective, and this is a toy model in the same way that an equal force for young Mills is a toy model in Scattenham. So hopefully, all this can be generalized something which is a little bit broader. For example, just even a scalar in the sitter, you're the sitter without being conformally coupled. And this is not out of reach, I have to say.
So if I may ask something, so I mean, if I actually want to get observables out of this, I have to integrate over all these x's and y's, right? Because these are these energies in the, I guess, in the ball, which I actually don't observe, right?
No. The energies are not in the bulk. The energies are, as I was saying before, the energies are boundary data in the sense that an energy, for example, for the state 1 is square root of p1 square minus m square.
What is m?
It's the mass of the state. If there's mass, if it's massless, you adjust the the module of the special momenta. So it's what I'm saying is that the energies are directly related to the special momenta. But in this picture, given that the special integration and the time integration just separate, and this is true for scalars, it's not going to be true in general for other cases. Actually, the only type of variables that you have are just energies. So it's not the full P.
So then you said M is just, I mean, if you're talking about conformally coupled scalar, so M is zero?
M can be, if you want, can be zero, or to be conformally coupled, M has some fixed value to make it conformally coupled. So from the conformally coupled, you can get, you can treat equally the, actually, you can think even more simply about all this picture in doing it equal time to correlatron in flat space, simply. And this is are computing this equal time correlators for flat space, and then you can take it this as a mass or being massless. This is just a definition of the energy. You have to decide which type of states you want to put. If you are in cosmology, you need to this curve to be conformally coupled. So you need this mass to have a specific value.
If there's no more questions, I'll thank the speaker.